Hi and welcome to the show. Today I'm delighted to have Beate Schelte on. She is a growth architect and a founder of the Women's Code. She creates strategies, designs, process maps, and blueprints for visionaries and leaders who want to maximize their profits and scale their impact. A first-generation immigrant who found herself $135,000 in debt as a single parent. She bootstrapped her passion for photography into a highly successful global business and eventually sold it to Bill Gates in a multi-million dollar deal, which I'm sure we're going to talk about. She's one of 100 top global thought leaders in 2021 by PeopleHub and one of 50 must-follow women entrepreneurs on Huffington Post. She's the author of the number one international award-winning Amazon bestseller, Happy Woman, Happy World. How to Go From Overwhelmed to Awesome, a book that corporate trainer and best-selling author Brian Tracy calls a handbook for every woman who wants health, success, and a fulfilling career. Beate, welcome to the show. With a vast array of interesting topics that we can talk about. And I was going to talk about your client list there, but it was going to take ages to do that. So let's get into it. So welcome to the show and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me, Nigel. So again, Beate Schelle here. I'm known as a growth architect, and what that means is I help people to architect growth by landing planes. A lot of visionaries, thought leaders, entrepreneurs, business owners, project managers, they just like to go to 30,000 feet and then they fly and circle at 30,000 feet. But you do need to land the plane with the idea eventually and then start executing it. And so I help with processes and systems. I work with a lot of people that have a spiritual aspect to what they do, that they don't just like work, but they also want work with a purpose. They want to make an impact in this world. I do believe that we can remove external blocks all we want, but if we then still are up our against our own internal blocks, our mindset, what we really believe in, our traumatized childhoods, if we never get over that, it's going to be very hard for us to be successful because it's a constant battle. And that's what I do, is I help people to figure out what they want, where they want to go, and then help them to architect the plan to get there.
Brilliant. I'm sure all the listeners will have some, a few of their ears will be pricking up there and thinking about, yeah, how do we? I like that analogy there where you've got the flying at 30,000 feet, but actually landing it. A lot of us have got lots of great, I'm terrible for it. I've got loads of fantastic ideas in my mind, but actually getting around to doing something with them sometimes is a battle. And even when I do, then I go back up into it, the next one and not finish off the other one. Just tell us a little bit about you. Outside of that, where are you? Where are you from? I know, as we said before, that you're a first-generation immigrant. Give us a little bit background of you rather than you as your business.
Yeah, so I come originally from Germany. I am now holding a dual citizenship. So I'm German American, and people always say, it's like, well, how do you explain that? And I said, well, my country is Germany. That's where I'm from, but my home is Los Angeles. So that's how you kind of combine both of those. I started out as a photographer. I was always in the creative industry. I loved photography. I loved being a creator. I just realized that I wasn't as good as a creator as I wanted to be. And I ended up very quickly understanding that I'm better at the business side of things. So when it had to be stuff organized, produced, I raised my hand and I just loved it. It comes very natural to me. So you say one, I say two, three, four, five. And then it just kind of pops out. But because I come from the creative industry, Nigel, I see a lot of people that have these crazy ideas. I mean, in photography and in fashion, we do see a lot of very, very colorful characters and a lot of people that are non-conforming. And my job many times was to bring them together and then have them produce something, and at the end of a couple of days and walk away with a final product. And I absolutely loved it. I moved then into Elle magazine in Germany. From there on, I immigrated to the United States, became a artist representative and a photography producer. And what that means is that I would be out in the field producing for clients like Mercedes-Benz and BMW and Wrangler, Levi Strauss, UK companies, some of the catalogs, and German and Denmark. And I was kind of like the hot producer here in Los Angeles. And I built that business up until a, you know, about $1 million business, and then a lot of really bad stuff happened over a really, really long period of time. I always say, what happened, what you hear about happening to other people all happened to me.
No, right. That's not great.
No, that is the understatement of the year. Yes, and lots of natural disasters, Nigel's fires, floods, riots, earthquake. September 11th wiped out $500,000 in one day. A lawsuit, a bad employee. I've covered it all.
Jeez. So you've got the thick skin to get through that sort of stuff.
Well, we call it disaster proof. I have also there's also a tsunami in there where I lost, unfortunately, a very, very wonderful person. And then now recently we added the pandemic, and as of last year we even had a hurricane warning here in Los Angeles. So I'm coming to full circle here of disasters that one can experience.
Jeez, yeah, it's hard to come back with all those sort of things in there. But now having that resilience is something that obviously with all of us have. Well, I think this the pandemic you mentioned it there is there's a different level of resilience that everyone's had to kind of develop to succeed through not just in business but just in life and trying to get there. That I see it with my kids. I've got two kids who've gone through that, and the closest thing that I had was the sort of Cold War kind of conversations and a bit of worry around that, but nothing on the level of the pandemic. And I wonder, it's that thing. I wonder whether that builds resilience. I assume it does with some people, and other people it causes a gap in that resilience, and it's something that's got to be got over when they're older. And
You
it
know,
it's worries me
yes,
as a parent.
that's a really good point. I always say resilience is the audacity to not give up. And when we change our perspective on resilience, Nigel, what happens is that's where the magic happens. So people say, I want to be successful. I want to make hundreds of thousands of pounds or hundreds of thousands of dollars, or I want to be a millionaire. But they don't realize that where they are at, they don't have the skill set, the mindset, the actions. They're not taking the actions that are required to be at that level. I work with a lot of people that are, their net worth is multi-millions of dollars. And what happens is at that level, you have to think and act very differently. And I'm going to give you an example. So I was in a forum that I facilitate, and one of the people in the forum said, I'm looking for an executive assistant, a virtual assistant. And she says, well, I want to get somebody for $3. And I looked at her and I said, did you not just say the volume of contracts that are coming in the door are in excess of $3 million? And she says, yes. I said, why are you hiring somebody that's $3 an hour? Why are you even wasting your time trying to find somebody at the lowest, maybe I'm going to do my DJ voice, the lowest possible level, in the hopes that you're going to put your time, energy in this to find somebody who's $3 who can perform work at a $20 an hour virtual assistant level? Why? Well, I don't think I should be paying more than that. I said, but you are paying more than that. What's your time worth sifting through resumes of $3 an hour people? I don't pay my VA in the Philippines $3. And that really is the problem a lot of people have, is that they have scarcity and poverty mindset. And then they're wishing that success would be the result of it. Where the mindset has to be a prosperity and an abundance mindset for the rest of it to happen.
Yeah, I can see that. It is. I listened to a couple of podcasts and the different conversations on there, and they're talking about when you've got a, especially entrepreneurs, where you're running a business that is, and it's former guests on the show as well, Andy and Joel, where they talk about their $2 tasks, their $10 tasks, their $50 tasks, their $1,000 tasks, And if they're spending all their time on those $5 tasks, the $1,000 tasks, which could get done in that time, aren't getting done. And that's how they kind of look at everything. They kind of, how well they do, I don't know, but they look at everything they do. And I think it's something I try to do sometimes and fail quite miserably at times, is what that delegation thing is, what you should be delegating, what you should be giving away to someone else.
Yeah, there's an exercise that I do called the real value of your time, where you are looking at some of the things, like if somebody gives you a $100 certificate, a gift certificate, and you go to the Apple store, but you have to now wait in line. How long would you wait in line for you to have this $100 be worth it? And if you say, well, I'll be waiting 2 hours to get a $100 gift certificate, then you value your hourly rate at $50. And so there's a couple of examples like this. So this is an exercise I do with my clients. And then they say to me, well, I am worth this much. And then I let them do this. And they say, my hourly is $400. And then it shows up that their hourly is 75 because they'll be waiting for 4 hours for a $100 gift certificate, or they're not paying the extra $100 for a nonstop ticket that'll get them in there 2 hours early. So you have to be very clear on what you value, time or money, because ultimately you and I know that time has a monetary value on it.
It's interesting because it's one of those ones that straight away I've got things pop up in my head there where so I part of the podcast and trying to grow the podcast, and this is it's a problem I have with myself is I don't have a budget for it, so I don't have a budget. I just try and do it I want to try and bootstrap it is the phrase I wanted to use it.
Bootstrap. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I want it to pay for itself. I don't want to be putting my money in to get it done. I put my time in, and that's that. And then hopefully at some point the idea would be it's going to fund something. I've got a few things in there that are supposed to help, and they don't always help. But then I look at it and I go, well, should I be investing in advertising? Should I be doing a load of Facebook advertising? Or should I do a bit of LinkedIn advertising, or try to use a bit of TikTok? All these different things, and it's kind of then I look at the cash sum that I've got to put in, and I kind of think, is it worth it for what I think I'm going to get out of it? And some of that's about confidence about what the product is. And is it that I think that if I invest in it, and I wonder to myself whether I believe in this product, because I'm not willing to take that risk because I don't believe in it. Sometimes it's just a case of, am I just being prudent and bloody minded because I want it to bootstrap itself and I want it to feed itself. And I wonder how many people you work with in that in. It'll be the same in not just entrepreneurs, but also with people doing in their job, investing in training and investing their time in getting better at what you do at the job. How do you see that kind of thing, that kind of mindset when it's kind of stuck there,
Yeah.
kind of right or wrong?
Well,
Get my consultancy here, then free consultancy.
so the example that I give, Nigel, is imagine that you go for a walk in the spring. And now you see this beautiful oak tree. It's an oak tree like no other oak tree. And the oak tree says, Nigel, listen up, buddy. This whole stress with putting all these leaves out all at once in spring is too stressful for me. So here's what I'm going to do is I'm just going to take 100 leaves. I'm just going to start 100 leaves. If the birds come and appreciate the leaves, people stand underneath and they admire my 100 leaves. And if the squirrel comes and plays, then I'm going to do a cautious rollout over the next couple of weeks. Said no oak tree ever. So the answer to your question that you didn't ask is if a concept doesn't exist in nature, then it can't work. If there's no concept that's called wait and see in nature, it's spring, everybody knows what they need to do in spring. The birds are having babies, the bees are buzzing, there's a limited amount of time available, everybody's out there doing their thing. And here we are, and we go, is this the right time? Should I be doing this? I wonder, I wonder, I wonder. There's a law, a spiritual law that's called the law of polarity. And the law of polarity says that you can only see white because black exists. Otherwise, how would you know? You can only recognize beauty because the opposite exists. You can only recognize good because bad exists. Now that means if you can see your success, then it can only exist because the lack of success exists. So if you're in lack of success, then you're just missing the opposite. So it's already there.
Yeah.
And I think when you explain to people that there is an actual universal law that's responsible for these things, then it makes it very different and difficult. Or have you ever seen a squirrel that goes, ah, puh, global warming, there's not going to be any more winters. I'm not going to stress myself out over a bunch of nuts. Who knows how many I need anyway? I'm meant to lose some weight. No squirrel said that ever. I mean, it is fall, boom, they're out in the summer, they're taking the nuts, they're hiding it. Their full expectation is there will be a winter and I will need it. Only us, as the human with a brain, we go, there is global warming. The squirrel has a point. Maybe, you know, if I run a spreadsheet on that and I manage that project properly, you know, maybe the squirrel needs to just do like 25% less in effort because it's, you know, not as cold as, yeah, makes perfect sense. Seriously, people. So that's how I answer these questions on, you can't believe everything you think if you've been given the idea and you can envision your success, then it must be possible because you're living the opposite of that, but you have the vision, so it must be possible. So you're in whatever black, so white must exist. So then the question isn't, does it exist? The question is, how do I get there?
Yeah.
And what are the actions I need to take?
Yeah, I get that. It's a good way of looking at it. It's kind of, it's a possibility. It's one of the options that we've got. And therefore, if it's an option, then understanding what the steps are to do. It's like you talked about the plane, isn't it? If you're flying around in a plane and you've got to land it, well, you know you can land it. It's just the steps that need to be taken in order to land that plane.
Yeah, and the steps are always the same in order.
Mm-hmm.
You got to know where you're flying to. You got to know what the requirements are for the airport. You know that you have to reduce your speed and your height in, you know, the certain criteria. If you can't see, you need to use your instruments. You need to be subject matter expertise. So you have the mindset, I know I can land this plane because I have the training. The action set, I know all the actions I need to. I've taken all the actions to become a pilot, so I'm fully proficient in doing this. I have the skill set, you know, I'm a pilot, I know how to land this plane. And then the rest becomes like, well, I landed the plane. Of course I landed the plane. That was the whole plan in the first place. It's only us in some of these other things where you know, in your case, you say, well, I want to do a podcast. Well, you're doing a podcast. Well, I want to grow the podcast. Well, then grow it. How are you going to grow it? Well, I'm going to think about on whether or not I should do something different than what I'm doing right now. Well, what are you doing right now? Not much. Is it growing? No. Well, then the answer is, what are you going to change to get a different result?
Yeah. It's interesting. I was listening to a different show the other day, and it was about, and I think one of the quotes, and sometimes it gets attributed to Einstein, but as they said on there, everyone's getting it. Every quote gets attributed to Einstein at the moment. Was along the lines of, if you keep on doing what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always done. You always get what you've always got. And it's just madness to think that by doing the same thing.
The quote is insanity is the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if it is. It is that situation where you go, but it's hard to do. It's uncomfortable where I am.
Well, But that's the mindset, you know. So this is the part of the mindset piece where your mind says, Beate, Nigel, but look, where you are at least you know. You're managing. It's okay. It's not bad. It's not great. It's good. Why don't you just stay where you are? At least we know. Because if you were to do something different, there's a probability it won't work. Well, there's a probability it will work. Because when you started as a child with this childlike curiosity, you said, one day I'm going to be a pilot, a firefighter, I'm going to make something out of myself. And then you changed your mind like 60 times until it became what you became. But you became something. So it worked. So it worked. And there was nobody there. It's not like your mom said when you were 7 years old, Nigel, you wanted to be a firefighter. What's this pilot nonsense all of a sudden? Or the following year, oh, now you want to be a doctor? Oh, really? What? Jesus, I'm so confused with you, says nobody ever. It's
No, you
okay to say something, to pursue something, and then to change your mind because it's a path. The second step only shows up after the first step. But unless you make a decision to move forward, what's ever going to happen? Nothing.
No, you're right. And it is a case of, it is something I've always looked at, is from a point of view of, I remember when I started, I was looking at being a, working on a stock exchange, then talking to someone when I was leaving, we were going to college actually, and one guy was going to study accountancy, and I said, "What the heck are you doing that for? It's boring." And I was doing business studies, which I obviously hadn't clicked to me that there was accounting in that. And then I moved on to being an accountant for 10 years. And from that, moved on to project management, and then moving into, still in project management, but loads of different types of things. And it's just like, it's quite, I always talk to my daughters about the fact what they're going to do. They talk about what they're going to do, and I say, "Don't worry, I don't know what I want to be yet, and I'm 55 nearly, and at some point I'll decide what I want to be, but I'll find what I want to be." And they may drop on what they want to do at 20 and be their passion for the rest of their life. I may stay as a project manager until I stop doing stuff. But I might find passion, different passions at different ways. I'm always open to that point of view of being ready to go, actually, that's the thing that is me and I want to do. And that change, that the thing, I think there's a lot of us do that, and I've done it before, is that there's a fear. And it's that, I don't know if you're aware of a guy called Steven Peters, who wrote the book The Chimp, The Chimp Paradox, which is talking about our inner chimp, our inner
Yeah,
self,
the
you
monkey
know,
mind, yeah.
and about the fact that you've got that monkey mind that's always sitting there going, "Oh, you don't want to do that." They only care about two things: safety and pleasure. So that's where you kind of it, everything that you try to do, if it isn't giving you immediate pleasure, and if it isn't, or it, and it isn't making you feel threatened, then it's happy. But anything else outside of that, it isn't. And many of these things are fall into those comfort zones, those stretches out, and we ignore it, and we ignore that inner voice, and just carry on with it. But some of them are just too, they're too ingrained, and it's got too much support for the rest of your brain to say, "Well, you might be right, actually, that chimp of yours," because there's all this evidence where you failed before in that environment. And you kind of go, "Okay, so I've got all that evidence from my computer." He talks about it, and that gets fed by the chimp and by the gremlins that are in there, as he describes, that just are full programming because you've heard it said to you, you've thought it yourself, and just because you think it, just because you hear it, your brain doesn't distinguish whether it is or isn't. It just files it under that matches that, and it does that pattern matching and replays it. And you've still got to have that hind brain, or that bit of whatever they call your brain, to be able to go there and go, "Hang on a minute, you lot, stop. You lot are feeding me this. Let's reason about this." And all of us, I think, get stuck in that situation where we don't, that skeptic view of our own thoughts. And I've seen it the same with deliveries of projects and things like that. It's kind of like you sit there going, "Well, that'll never work. We always do it this way. We've got to do that." Now, I'm in situations where when you get the agile community, where we're looking at doing things in an agile manner, there's quite a lot of nervousness about, for me and from others, of not having that predictability of what's going to happen and when it's going to happen. And when you get that feeds that uncertainty, and that uncertainty makes it harder for anyone to accept those situations. So they only do it halfway. And I really struggle about doing it. It's worse than not doing stuff sometimes. And I wonder whether from in a a personal growth and from a business thing. It's where someone, they don't go all in, but they don't ignore it. Because how do you see that sort of? It's like it's coming down with a plane and not putting down your landing gear. Yeah, it's kind of, it ain't gonna work.
Yeah, you know, it's like this thing to say that I want to find my life partner. And I want to find a life partner that has all these different qualities, and then you never leave the house. Or you don't respond to any of the online ads that you're putting out, or you never even put one out. You say, I want to find a life partner, you never leave your house, you never run an ad. I can tell you what the result of that's going to be: zero. Because you can't multiply zero with zero. Or how about you say, I'm going to drive to see my parents this weekend. But you never leave the house, you never get into the car. Or you get into a car and you never start it. So the problem people have is that they've trained themselves to not keep their own word to themselves. It is a lack of commitment to yourself. And it is so common. So when someone says to me, I will call you tomorrow, my expectation is you will call me tomorrow. Otherwise, say, I'll call you in the next couple of weeks or until I call you again. But if you say to me, I'll call you next week, and you don't call me next week, you are training yourself. Like, I don't care if you call me or not, but you train yourself that your word cannot be trusted. So now if you say, I'm going to make $1 million, your brain goes, yeah, like you called this person 50 times next week. Your word is useless.
Yeah, it's
So
pattern
people,
matching, isn't it?
it's unbelievable. It's like, I mean, in project management, it's a deadline. A deadline's a deadline. You commit to the deadline. Everybody commits to the deadline. Otherwise, not a deadline. Otherwise, it's a wishful thinking. So if you can't commit to the deadline, why can't you not commit to all these other things? So is it different to say we get this project done in a month versus I'm gonna find three ways to advertise my podcast, just to stay with the example, that are low cost or for free in the next month. And then because you said it and you commit to it, now the action is I'm going to have to look for it. So now you Google promoting my podcast. Now you see that there's a bunch of Reddit strings and a bunch of Facebook groups, and that some of these groups are allowing you to promote your podcast once a week in one string, not all the time, but once a week. Well, that would qualify. Now you kept your word. The problem is when you train yourself to not keep your word to yourself, that's when you become this like wishful thinking, wishy-washy person. It would be really nice, and nobody believes you anyway. I am my word. And I want to be held accountable to it because I think it's very critical. If I say I'm going to do something, I better be doing it. And if I overcommit myself and I'm learning that I cannot do that because I'm running always out of time, I need to learn on how to commit myself to things I can actually execute on. Because it is better to commit to less and consistently execute versus to overcommit and then not execute, because then you're breaking your word again. And it's not about breaking your word to other people, which has its own consequences. It's worse than you break the word to it yourself. When somebody says, I want to grow my business. Well, what are you going to do? I'm going to think about it. Well, what results do you think that's going to get? Are you not already thinking about this? Okay, well, how long are you going to be thinking about it? Well, I'm going to think about it until I have a solution. What are you going to look for a solution for? Well, it can't cost any money. I don't want to really put too much time and effort in it. It has to be super easy, and it's got to get me there really fast. Seriously? Sounds like a Brother Grimm fairy tale. You're going to have to commit. You have to do the actions. You have to do the learn the skill set that's required. And you're just going to have to do it. That's how you do it. So I think that the question on whether or not I want to, that's what makes it hard. If your kids go to the car and they don't want to be buckled in, that's not an option. So how is it possible that you can do that, but you can't do that? So your kids want to play at the stove with the fire burning, That's not an option. So a no here is an absolute no. So you can say no here, but you can't say no over there. So why is that? What makes that different from that? So you have to catch yourself as you are going into these places and say, am I full of shit here or not?
Yeah.
Because we are the best liars in our own pockets.
Yeah, it's interesting that, because there's a lot of little flags popping up there for me, but that is around where I've committed to myself to do something and there's something else got in the way. And it's been over different careers and there's things that I've thought about doing and then there's always an excuse not to do them. And when it's, as you said, when it's to yourself, there's only you who it impacts because it you haven't told anyone, and I suppose it's habit, isn't it? It's a habit of doing what you say you're going to do. And I there's a character style about it, I think as well, is that there are certain characters that will, if they said they're going to do it, that's what they're going to do. That's it. End of focus. There are certain other characters that don't have that focus and therefore need to have tools to ensure that when they say they're going to do something, they do it. And I'm one of those, I'm always looking for those tools to manage, for me to manage myself better and make
And
sure
that's a
I.
project manager for you. If you look at yourself as a project
Oh,
and you look
yeah.
at what you do as a project, then you already know what you need to do. I mean, there's no reason you can't be agile with yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's something I found, and it's a couple of years ago now with, after the pandemic, and I put myself in a position where I made myself ill, because of stress, because of trying to take on too much, because of saying, yeah, oh, I'll do that. Oh, right. And I've got that. And I've got that. And then it became busy. And then we had all of the other stuff in there. And my emotional well just filled. And I think that whole thing of, and you feel yourself failing and you feel yourself not achieving those things that you say you're going to do. And I just the way they were talking now, I know part of that problem was at the point where I wasn't doing what I said I was going to do. I said, yeah, I'll get that to you on Tuesday. And then something else had happened and something else had happened. And my focus wasn't in the right place. I wasn't able to stay focused. And then I wouldn't deliver that. And that would add another thing that I was late on that I had struggled with. And my confidence level went down. And even to the point where when I said to my management that I needed to stop what I was doing, I said, look, I'm failing at this. I'm consistently failing to deliver. Now, in their mind, they could see there was a lot going on. They could see that it was very busy and they knew that I was moving it forward. But to me, I felt as if I was failing. And I just wonder whether it was because I could see those little, the lower level things that I wasn't doing when I said, and that thing, that build up in the back of my mind of saying,
Compound.
you've done it again. Oh, you've not done that again. You've not done that again. You've not done that again. And I've felt it since and spotted it and gone, hang on, I've got too many things going, too many plates. And it's right, I need to drop that one. And rather than being forced into failing, I'm choosing not to do. And then if someone sees that as a failure, whatever, it doesn't matter because I've said, right, I'm choosing not to do that because I only have this much bandwidth to do this, so much energy, so much focus. And I just I think it's something that I think it's really interesting the way that you described it, in that looking at that from this lens and looking back over those 2 or 3 years ago,
You can't
I
even know where it's originated.
I can see some of that, and I can see where some of my thinking in recent months is building on that stuff that's still there. And there's a number of different things there where it's building on that. And I've got a, that's really me. I'm just, my brain's now going with, right. What am I going to do different? What am I going to do to change myself, but also change my perception of myself so that it'll be easier to change as well? Because action's going to make it change the most, isn't it? So by that consistency, by doing what you say when you're going to do it, and that's something of a, in a, it's certainly in a professional instance, but also in personal relationships. If you say you're going to do something, do it. Now, actually,
You don't have to say you to do it. You don't have to commit. You don't have to say I'm going to see my mom on Sunday if you don't want to. know,
you can
you know, I had this amazing trip planned to Nepal and Bhutan, and it was ridiculously expensive. And I looked at the date and the time, and I've just been in Costa Rica, and then I went to see my mother in Germany, and I would have, you know, and the trip's already in April. And I looked at it, I was like, there's just not a chance in hell I can do all of this in my business with all the time that I've been traveling thus far and not go nuts. So I wanted to do it, and I wanted to commit, but I couldn't commit because I knew I didn't have the capacity. And we tend to avoid things that are painful. So we don't want to have these difficult conversations. We don't want to talk to people that are where we have a problem. We just always love to be in that high flying. Everything is great. Yeah, sure, I'll help you. I'll get that done. I'll help you move. Hell no, I'm not helping you move. I can't even lift a box, you know, with my neck. I know I'm gonna get hurt. So that honesty to say not now, or you know, that sounds like a great idea, but I don't have the capacity or availability for this right now.
Yeah, and I think it is that thing of where you can put yourself, say, you
Yeah.
can commit to helping people, you can commit to do something, and rather than just failing at it, when you recognise that there is a problem to it, go to yourself, well, yeah, I've made a priority call on this. This is a higher priority than that.
Yes.
I've made that priority call. Sorry, I can't help you now. Things have changed. I can't do that now. Now, ideally, when you've committed, depending on what it is, it's different, isn't it? But and if you're doing that on every single thing, well, that's again, that's not ideal. But it is a case of it's that conscious decision rather than the unconscious decision to choose not to do something rather than just fail to do something. I think it makes a difference, doesn't it?
It's like project management. If you take a project on and then you don't complete it, you're going to get fired. So a lot is at stake here. So if you can't commit to a project, why can you not commit to other things that you say? What makes that different? I think that's the standard that we want to hold ourselves to. It's like the stuff that we don't stick to is just not that important then. So, well, then if it's not important, why are you committing to it?
That's it, yeah. And I've had things like that where I've gone, actually, I'm not going to do that anymore.
We all do that. We
Yeah.
all do that. Yeah, I'm gonna come, mom, and I'm gonna stay with you for a week. There's not a chance in hell I can stay with my mother for a week. I can barely tolerate her for a day. And that has a lot to do with my past history with her and who she is and the stories she makes up and my abuse. But I had to come to the point where I said that there's just I am going to give what I can give without compromising or depleting or burning out myself. So I can come and see you, but I can only come and see you for a couple hours at a time because afterward I am spent, emotionally spent. There's no reason that I need to allow you to be an energy vampire because I'm in charge of how much I want to give and how much I don't.
Yeah, and that's it. And in different situations and different relationships,
Yeah.
you have a certain amount of energy that you're willing to put into it.
Oh yeah. And why are you feeling bad about it?
You have to choose. It's your choice. It's your priorities. It's your life.
It's your life, and if somebody doesn't suit you anymore and you become very successful and suddenly these people are talking smack about you, let them go. Nobody says that you have to be friends with everybody forever and ever and ever. There's no rule, no law. I mean, even though you know, the UK is like America, there's got to be a law for everything, but thank God that law doesn't exist yet. It's like, Jesus.
I know. And the thing is that life's like that, isn't it? You've got to be in a situation where people have got to that kind of you've got to choose people that lift you up. There are situations where you will be in that situation where there are some people you will be involved with. But you, as you say, you put those limits on. There'll be some people, whether it's in the workplace, in the office, or whether it's even media and social media and tools and things like that, where you're I've for a number of times just not I turn people off so that I don't see them, because every time I see them on the Facebook, I'm like, I really don't need that. And you're making me dislike you more and more and more. And I don't need that. The person from my people from my history, that they're fine face to face. They seem to be different on Facebook. And it's kind of like, think, well, there's no point. What am I getting from it? Nothing except for resentment of that person and not liking them anymore. So I'll just switch it off. And you kind of got to remove yourself and filter that stuff, haven't you?
The snooze for 30 day is such a great feature, isn't it?
What's that? Sorry.
Oh, on Facebook, you can go and snooze them for 30 days.
Oh, right. No, I don't bother with that. I tell a lie. I have done, but I've it more
Especially
often.
when people get so political, Nigel.
Yeah, and those are the sort of things that I get into. It's kind of when it becomes unpleasant and things like that, you think, yeah, I don't need that. And it, actually, if there's a thing going on. If usually with that sort of stuff, I can find it quite amusing, but some people get a little bit too far.
Yeah, I see it on LinkedIn now. So now they're trying to infiltrate LinkedIn with all this political stuff. And it's like, please, can we just have one platform where we don't have to listen to this perpetual nonsense and just focus on business?
Yeah, I know. And I think it's interesting. It's as you say, LinkedIn has been. It's an interesting thing. It does, because it's like a public house. It's like a bar of any sort. It becomes the people who are there, and that's what it is. That's the culture. It's the same as any culture in a business. It's a summation of the people that are there. And I think there is a little bit of difficulty, isn't it, with social media. I think the LinkedIn side of it, there is a different group of people that are going to be on there compared to a normal social media.
Yeah, they're supposedly professionals, but I will tell you, people do such stupid stuff. I
Yeah. And
always say, if you post something on LinkedIn, you better be prepared that you're willing to completely ruin your reputation over one post. And it's out there in perpetuity for all colleagues, for all partners, for all clients, for all prospects to see what you're really thinking. I mean, I'm okay with that on X because it's just become intolerable. I think for the first time since inception of Twitter, I've actually thought about deleting my accounts. It's literally intolerable, the content.
It's on for me. I've not used it. I pop on there once every 2 or 3 months and scroll through 5 minutes, and
Revolting.
then I just switch it off. It's just
It's literally revolting. That's how
not.
bad. Yeah,
I
it's
just
just not.
it is, and it's not even. There's a few voices in there, but and it's one of those ones where you kind of go, right, the culling of it and managing of it and removal of stuff that you don't want to see. It's just so much energy. I think I can't be bothered with it. So yeah, I think LinkedIn tends to be my social media, and that's an interesting one actually as a business and as a professional. It's something growing your influence, growing your experience, and social media, and sort of advancements in change. Because if we think about, I remember I had a badge, and I can't remember how long ago on LinkedIn, one of the first million LinkedIn members, and I think it's like at 70 million now or something. Because I joined it way, way back when it first saw it, and I thought, that sounds like a good idea. I'm too lazy to keep people's business cards. Most of the people I know are remote, so I can keep that connection. And it's kind of, how do you see in this growth mindset that we've talked about before, and how those tools fit in?
I think that what's going to happen is what we'll be seeing is that a lot of platforms are going to go to deplatform users because it's all run by AI. I've been deplatformed from Facebook where at 2:30 in the morning, my account was hacked and deleted. And along with it, my ad account, my pages, everything's unrecoverable. And there's no way going back. And my desire to give Facebook any advertising money now, after what they've done to me, after I've been on this platform, whatever, since the beginning, are literally zero. So we're going to see more and more a tiredness and a people being less and less inclined to participate in some of this. And Facebook, I think Facebook is in trouble in general, because the only, when you go on Facebook, everything is just advertising. People are not using it as much. If you look at who's posting and who's posting frequently, you go, dude, you can't be working, because if you're on Facebook all day posting, you know, your spaghetti lunch, which nobody really cares about, then you must be having too much time in your hand. Hence, you're not busy. I don't have time for stuff like that. So I think we're going to see a lot of the platforms shifting. I think TikTok is going to become bigger and bigger and bigger because of the, you know, it's just a popular thing. The next thing's going to be just around the corner. I believe that LinkedIn is establishing itself very, very strongly as a professional leadership tool. So if you're not on LinkedIn, I mean, why are you even listening to this call? Yeah. Literally. I mean, and on LinkedIn, you need to look at this like this is your resume that's visible to everybody.
That's always been the way that I've treated it.
That's always been the way I've treated it. And when I say something about stupid people, I say, I am not really sure why this is on LinkedIn, but I just want to tell you what I tell my clients, that stuff like that will make you lose clients. And you don't even, and you didn't even know, because your comments are visible from your page. It says recently posted on, and then you can click and then you can go and see what I posted on just from my page. Yeah. Now, if I'm having posts like UXXX or UXXX, or I put people down, that's not going to work. So you want to be very, very clear about that. So social media is definitely here to stay, but the platforms are shifting as we speak. What you said is not interesting me, and I don't feel like the need to be out there as much. I think that's general. It's a fatigue that we're seeing.
Yeah.
Because there really is no real information. It's all marketing, and people just don't want to be marketed to as much anymore. The rules have changed anyway. So if you're in business, you better be changing the way you do things. And LinkedIn, to some degree, is still working, but even though the advertising is ridiculous, I mean, literally every connection request is a pitch. Yeah. Every single connection request is a pitch.
I think it gets to the point where you have it's so often now that I'll get a pitch and someone's got a project management role of some description in their title, and then immediately that I've accepted the connection that I get. Do you want PMI certification? Do you want APPM? So do you want this certification? 10 days, guaranteed money. And I'm like,
those people that do the PMP certification need to be arrested and thrown in jail with the key thrown away. I mean, literally, I get 50 of them a day.
Yeah. Touch wood, I don't get that many. But it's just one of those ones you just go, dude, look. It's boring, and then you get people who go there, right, do you want this developer job, because I've got quite often Pega for some reason. I've got Pega in on my on my experience, so I get Pega developer job, and they've not read what is there, and it's kind of I get bored at times where I just go back to them and go, right, okay, which part of my CV did you, of my profile did you think fitted this job? I'm really curious, can you help me please? Like this tumbleweed from them. No answer.
Yeah. Or just a simple response. What made you reach out?
Yeah. Yeah. And you just any engagement other than yes, please. And you get a pushback on it. You
get crickets. Yes.
Yeah. So just there was a few things that we talked about in your business, you were saying about where you were in photography and doing production work with it was Elle Magazine and people like that. And just a thought on that, and just trying to constrain it. It always reminds me when I look at maybe directors, producers of movies. I also think from sort of like this kind of thing where you'll be doing for clients, shoots for clients and that sort of stuff. They're very much in the realms of, I think, parallel, if not just another name of project management.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Just kind of with those sort of roles. And I know there's subtle differences, and working with creatives is well,
wild can be, and crazy.
It can be people as well, because actually, When I look at it, I think there's a lot of creativity as part of what we all have.
I think so. I think project management is a lot of creativity, and people always go like, "Oh," but it's like, "No, it's amazing."
Especially in status reports, I find that's where most of the creation goes in. But it's creative writing generally in those. But what? How did you? What would you say were the things that you that kind of stood out for you in the in that period? That if you're looking at it from a project management point of view, what were the key things that you? What was the process? A sort of 5 minute process of if you had a client who you're doing a shoot for, is it similar to sort of a marketing client would be working, or is this what are the different what are the kind of things you had to do? It's a long garbly question. Apologies.
Well, I mean, you just go and you look and you say, well, what are we doing? What's the goal here? And then we know if we're doing a catalog, or we're doing an ad, or we're doing hang tags, or point of sales support, stuff that goes on the clothing. And you know what you need to do and how many you need to do and for what kind of products, and whether they're mood shots or actual product shots. And then you have to reverse engineer, and you say, well, how many models do we need for that? And how many days do we need for that? And are we having an overall theme for this production? Where are we going to go on the location? And then you look for locations, you provide locations, you do castings for models, you suggest models, you send them, a lot of times I send them to Europe. We have FedEx back then, before even all this internet stuff was available. And you just go and you think about, if this is the project and I need to bring it back to today, what are the things that I need to do from here until then? So there's a schedule, there's a timeline, there's a production plan, there's a production book, there are things that you can foresee, things you cannot foresee, the weather, and
Risk management then.
yeah, risk management, exactly. But I find it very comparable on whether I do strategic planning for like a company like Amazon for one of their units, or whether I did a photo production. I find it not very different. It's like, what do you want? What do we know? What do we have? What's a priority? What do we need to get away with? What are we doing? And then how are we going to do it? And then you do it.
Yeah. No, that's interesting because it always you don't. It's a lot of those fine. It's the whole definition of a project, isn't it? It's something with a finite start and end goal. And you look at movies, you look at games design, you look at magazines even on a monthly basis as well. And you look at the digital websites and all those things. And all of those have got that. When you pull the curtains back and I look at behind it and I go, no one is called a project manager in those roles.
No,
Or
no.
you might have someone, I don't know, say within a big movie, they might do something where they'll have, right, project manager for IT or, and, I mean, they'll be within those specialist arenas. But the fact is that whole thing and that in all the creative industries, they're project managers all over the place. They just don't have those roles, titles.
No, I mean, we call producers. So that's the title. But yes, a producer or a line producer is right along the lines of the same thing. But I think the project management, it's really all about operations. How do we make it function? And how do we put these systems in place? And what do we need? And how do we get people to come together and do change management, or implement a new process, or get a project done on time? Or how do we even break it down? And that's, I think it's the same thing. I mean, how do I break this down into small steps? And then who are the people that are performing those small steps? I think there's a lot of similarities. You're absolutely correct, Nigel.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, just looking back over, I just brought up the script that I when I introduced you earlier. There was a couple of things in there where I wanted to have a chat about, really. First, I suppose the two things that come, maybe they go hand in hand. You'll tell me that you said the founder of the Women's Code, and you've got your award-winning book, Happy Woman World. Do you want to just tell us about those? Are they connected? Are they separate, or are they and that handbook about, I've got some female listeners out there about, and how they, as Brian Tracy describes it, I'm sure they want to be, they want health, success, and a fulfilling career. So, do you want to talk
Yeah,
about?
I mean, I've been, when I started my career, very many times, I was the only woman in the room, or the most opinionated woman in the room, maybe to put it that way. I felt that when I, as I went through my career and I was a single parent, I was an immigrant, I'm living in the United States, I found that there is very little no BS information for women out there. A lot of the stuff is so fluffy. Woman in an oversized sweater, perfect makeup, her eyebrows done, with a cute little baby crawling in the sparkling clean kitchen floor. She's drinking a nice glass of Cabernet with a laptop, with one hand with a fully manicured finger on it, telling us in only 4 hours a week she's making an extra $20,000 a month. I have found that that is not true. I have found that the reality is messy. Then the reality is cars breaking down, bills needing to be paid, kids getting sick at the inappropriate time, you're not feeling good, you're having to do all these things, and you are always struggling with trying to do everything together. But then everywhere you go, you have this vision of this perfect version of yourself that looks nothing like you because people don't want to talk about it. And so I wrote the book, Happy Woman, Happy World, because I wanted to give women an actual guide. And in the book, I'll outline exactly how you overcome the superhuman paradox. And how do you get out of this perfectionism mode? And how do you understand this concept of egorhythms, which means that we all have different rhythms in life that we are in? You cannot be in nine rhythms at the same time that each have the same value. Sometimes the relationship's most important. Sometimes your kids are most important. Sometimes you are most important. Sometimes there's a tragedy. Sometimes there's a health scare. You have to learn how to set priorities. And, I teach that in the book under the concept egorhythm. And I called it the Women's Code Presents because I wanted women to understand that we have to have a code amongst each other because men have a code. And if we don't understand that the larger battle is out there, not amongst each other, we'll never get there. Because this women fighting other women is fueled by society, is fueled by men, because if women take each other out, good for men. Then they don't have to worry about 50% of the competition. Why wouldn't they? And sometimes somebody just makes an absolutely ridiculously stupid comment, and the comment goes like, oh my God, you're so emotional. What the heck is that supposed to mean? And women take the bait. What do you mean? Why do you say that? I'm not emotional. You already lost. You already lost because you responded to something absolutely atrociously stupid. Rather than that, if anybody ever makes a stupid comment, you can be black, white, green, yellow, purple. You can be a woman, man, LGBTQ plus, anything in between. When somebody says something really stupid to you, here's what you do. And you do exactly what I tell you. You do. Oh, God. Oh, Jesus. Oh, that was funny. So, what I was just saying, and you go right back to where you were, it's called a checkmate move. There is no recovering from that. When somebody says something stupid, you lean your head back, you start laughing like it's the funniest thing you ever heard. If you can squeeze out a tear and wipe it off, like it's so ridiculous, you don't respond. You just say, oh, good one. Good one, John. Oh, I haven't heard that one in a long time. So what I was saying is, and you go right back.
Yeah, I can see how that would work.
It's so effective. It is so effective. And this person, whoever said that, will never say it again. Because now they look like an absolute moronic idiot, and everybody else goes like, "Ooh, that hurt, John." Yeah, that's one for her.
Yeah, it's interesting that I think the over the years, the change in the dynamic in work is it's fascinating. And as I said before, I'm from a point of view of where I'm not getting the discrimination. I do see where people are competing, or have seen less so now, I've got to say. There's a lot more support I see within groups of each other rather than competing with each other. And I think there's more, and I again, it's my maybe it's my perception. My perceptions have changed in the last 10 years. My historic, I'm trying to think. I've got kind of a the biases from my growing up, from where I came from. I they've changed. I've recognized those biases. I've recognized the things that, as a younger me, because of where I grew up in the 70s and 80s in the UK, there was a very the bias from a race, from a and a gen from gender and from sexual preference. There is a lot of things that were around at that time that influenced me and my, not in a overt behavior way, but in an underlying sort of shaping of my thinking, which I've changed in the last 10 years significantly.
Look, back then everybody was like that. It's not that. I mean, come on, in Germany we had books that referred to particular races, and we had these chocolate covered marshmallow things, and they had a really not a race friendly name. And so there were things that people did and said. I mean, we were playing cowboys and robbers, and and in Catholicism, there is still, to this day, when the wise men go around, one of them is black, and so there is often a white guy that puts the black paint in the face, which is today completely inappropriate and will immediately get you arrested for racial inappropriation and stuff like that. So I think we also need to give each other a little bit of a break. Nobody's trying to impersonate anybody. I think a lot of this was not meant in a bad way. It's just that we took on these kinds of things because we didn't know any better until we could think for ourselves, and then we said, "Look, it's really not okay." And as long as we have that, it's all good. It's gotten a little out of control in some instances, where I'm now hearing stories about kids wanting to be addressed as furries, and where somebody has multiple genders, and then mid conversation they want to be addressed as she, and mid conversation then as he. It makes it very difficult for other people to even follow that concept. So I don't think people always mean bad. I think people just don't understand the sensitivities. But then you may not understand my sensitivities around that. And I may not understand your sensitivities around that. But if I come from a place saying, like, I believe that you do the very best you can, Nigel, and you assume that I'm doing the very best I can, and if I say something, you say, you know what, Beate, I think I understand where you're coming from, but this could be offensive for somebody, and here's why. Point taken, done, move on. We don't have to sue each other. We don't have to throw a fit. We don't have to call anybody. We don't have to make a social media post. You don't have to call me a Karen. It's just like done in the conversation. Not to say that some people really are absolutely atrocious and full on racist and misogynistic jerks, and they should probably be called out, but most people don't come from a bad place.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I think it's easy to I think it, from all cases, we all need to be in that situation where we're going, hang on, we need to be open to feedback, and we need to be in a safe place where someone feels they can give feedback to someone in the, about these things, because it's difficult in from both sides of the fence for us to be able to say, right, okay, we, like you said, exactly what you said. Someone could take umbrage of what they're saying, depending on how it's delivered, and it's something we've got to learn on how to take that and kind of get. It's being open about that feedback, being especially, and talk about how it makes someone feel. When you say that, that makes me feel like this. Could you do it different? It's a standard feedback or kind of model, isn't it? If, when you do that, it means we have to do this, which makes it harder. And it's about changing. And I saw I think what I sort of sit here and I think, how could me, and I try to when I don't know how. Or to do it right, sometimes I get it right, sometimes I get it wrong. How can I support women in business, and how can I support people who are, as a bloke who's got advantages, how do I support someone like that, and how do I become an ally, and what are the sort of things that what we can do, and male listeners can actually
Yeah,
do. How
I think the most important thing is to really be aware of your own behavior and just know that there is a wolfpack mentality that often kicks in, to be cognizant what is being said in the room. And as leaders or project managers, I mean, you are managing the project, to not just have the extroverted men speak, but then also go to the introverted women and say, that was really wonderful, John. Thank you so much for sharing that. Sabine, I know that you like to mull over the things before you speak. Anything you would like to add, and you know, gently bring people into the conversation, because especially on the introverted side, people are often feeling it. Extroverts are running them over, and there's no voice in the room. So really learn how to be a good facilitator, and to make sure that everybody has an opportunity to speak, and that you are not driven by your own biases, where you are. Because a lot of times we go like, oh God, she has such a shitty vibe, I don't even want her to be in the room. Well, there has to be a reason for that. You know, maybe it's an experience. I have a headline, you know, that I use on an email, and that headline is, "Are you okay?" And what I have learned is, you know, you originally used this as a marketing ploy on "Are you okay?" because it gets a phenomenal open rate. But then when people say, "No, not really, my wife of 50 years had a heart attack and died last week." You know, that
We
person is not okay. So you just don't know what's happening to someone. And when you come from this perspective of love and understanding and collaboration, and say, am I really living up to the leadership potential that I believe I have, that I give equal room for everybody? That when somebody comes up with an absolutely stupid idea, that I go, okay, I'm not quite understanding yet where you're going with that. Can you tell me more about that? I really want to make sure I get that. And not saying like, ugh, we tried that 5 years ago. That was a disaster. No. So give yourself these things of openness, and take your own biases out. And then if, and then give somebody the microphone. Help other people to lead. Say, you know what, Sabine, I'm gonna not say anything. I'm just gonna let you run with that part. Are you okay with that? You up for that? Why, you know, make sure that you take as many people with you as you can. And a lot of times, leadership or project management, yes, we're in charge and our name is on it. Everybody knows our name and on it. Everyone knows we are managing the project. Doesn't matter how you get it done. If it gets done correctly, nobody says, what part did Sabine have in this? Did you really project? It's still you as a project manager. You're still the boss on the project. You still get all the credit. And then you can say, you know what? Then you can be the humble guy. And you can say, you know what? Sabine, I really got to call her out on this one. God, boy, that woman stepped up on this project. She really deserves here a round of recognition. Because then you look good, because as a leader, you found a team member that was stepping up to the occasion. Everybody wins. That's what you need to go in with, that nobody's here to take anything away from you, that you're here to elevate and advance people.
That's some fantastic advice. Yeah, and that downward recognition to the team, I think, is fantastic.
Always.
And across as well, I've got a list from my latest project written up on my wall there, where I've got to, through our system, to actually go in and go, right, here's write the thing for the people to do it. Sometimes I've done it straight away when I've seen things. Sometimes I've batched them up, and I think it is so important. And where those bringing that device of bringing people into the conversation and making sure that you spot there's something wrong and are you okay? I love that idea. It's
Yeah,
fantastic.
and the other thing that I do is, when I start a meeting, I say, what are you grateful for and what are you proud of? So then people say, and it could be anything. It could be personal, or it could be the project. And somebody says, well, I'm really grateful. You know, my wife gave birth the other day. We're a little tired, but you know, boy, you know, we sure like our chubby little monster. That's great to be grateful, because you want people to be in a good mindset. And what I'm proud of is, I'm proud of that. I'm part of this team. I really feel that I'm I'm learning, or people say stuff that they're proud of that you didn't even know they did.
Yeah, you
Yeah,
find out.
I researched last night until midnight, you know, this one thing that on this project that I couldn't figure out how to solve. So proud of myself that I woke up with a solution this morning. You wouldn't even know unless you asked. So also give a platform for people to share some personal things because that makes a better team.
Yeah, we were doing something in lockdown, and on one of the projects, one of our managers, she put in place, which I initially kind of went, I'm not sure about that, but I think it worked really well, was in our stand-up we were having every morning, was kind of what was the best thing that happened last night,
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. Yes. Please keep
just
it. Yeah, please keep it PG though, though.
absolutely. Yeah, there's only so much sharing you could do. Because I used to do that with my little one when she used to struggle at school. I'd be saying, "What was the best thing that happened today at school?" Not what happened at school, because then I'd get one girl was saying,
Exactly.
"What I wanted was what was the best thing that happened."
Yeah.
You're coming up on time. I know you're going to have to scoot and stuff. Was there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to cover?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things. There's one thing that I've done because I do believe that there's a huge shift in the market toward consultants and coaches. And I've explained this extensively in the last couple of months. An employee is an expense, a consultant is a business development investment. Make sure that if you are in the independent route, that you are looking at your language and that you're positioning yourself in such a way that the companies know that you're not just a project manager, but that you are really a solution-driven expert that will help them to develop the business forward because that's language that they're using and that they're seeking right this very moment. And the other thing is, I've developed a quiz, and this quiz is called What's Your Talent Worth? And I had so many people that says, well, I want to go out on my own, or I want to take the high side hustle and the full hustle, or I don't think I'm making enough money. And I send them to the quiz, whatsyourtalentworth.com. It's an actual calculation, it's a mathematical calculation. So you put the numbers in, make sure you only put numbers in, n numbers, not don't write two, just put in the number two. And then it will go to a space and then it'll calculate based on our formula and then it'll spit out a number. Then either your number is really low and then you're not valuing yourself, or your number is really high and you're not making that number, then you're missing something in the way you're positioning yourself. So it's really designed to help you what's going on in this economy, in this market, where the potential is, and then looking at how do you value yourself, and then take, you know, if there's anything you need to talk about afterward, you come to me. You can of course always listen to my show, The Business Growth Architect Show, where we talk about success at the intersection of where strategy meets spirituality, because I believe that you cannot be successful unless you have internal and mindset control, where you are not reacting but fully in charge of everything. And make sure that wherever you pick up this show, that you go and pick up the show, you give Nigel a 5-star review, write a little comment are critical because of AI. AI looks for engagement. And then maybe share this episode with one other person who needs to hear what we were talking about today.
Yeah, that, I totally echo that support. That discoverability is amazing. So, Beatrice, there's only one thing to say is thank you so much for coming on the show. If people want to get in touch, what is the best website to jump on, or is it LinkedIn or email or whatever?
Yeah, I would just go to uncoverysession.com and fill out a 15-minute uncovery session. Let's talk if you heard something. In any other case, just take the quiz. I'm all over social media. Drop in the DM. Let me know what you heard on the show that resonated with you. Always happy to have a conversation.
Fantastic. So, yeah, thank you again for being on the show, and have a fantastic rest of your day.
Thank you so much, Nigel. Bye-bye.
Thank you. So it should have.